Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy analyst and writer, I guess. I don't know. At friendsoffantasybenefits.com. It's 2 weeks I've messed up the intro. Joining me is Mike Warner. Mike, how you doing?
We have like some role reversal going on. Matt's all of a sudden not here, and I'm the one replacing him. It's odd, isn't it?
Yeah, well, hopefully Matt can join us, you know, at some point. I'm really glad I put all the prospects talk up front. That's... You know, perfect. So
I like how Matt is driving home from somewhere unknown place, and he's still able to find time to tweet about Matt Carpenter. That's, I think, the best part of all of this.
Well, if you live in the Chicago area, please get off the roads. Joining us this week is our good friend Ryan Bloomfield from Baseball HQ. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Always great to be on. I think I've laughed for 10 minutes before we even started. So.
It's been a fun pre-show. Unfortunately, nobody actually gets to hear that.
No, yeah, you don't want to. It got dark. It got dark pretty quickly.
Quickly.
Ryan, why don't you tell people where you can reach on social media and then plug all your work and tell people a little bit about yourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me social media at RyanBHQ. Been writing for Baseball HQ, imagine that, since, I guess, like 2012. I'm the site social media director. I also do a weekly column there called The Speculator. And more of the same from there. So,
all right. And Mike, you can reach on social media where?
At Mike Werner, FWFB, where I just posted some awesome jerseys. I mean, I got to say, I'm pretty psyched about it.
And we've found where you've gotten these on the black market.
Yeah, we don't want to mention where I got them. Just know I'm enamored with these jerseys. I'm pretty happy about it, but unfortunately, I can't tell you where.
Yeah.
But the price is right.
If the price is right, then we can negotiate. That's
fine. Yeah, so slide into Mike's DMs on Twitter. So.
Don't slide into anywhere of mine. Just don't.
You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. You can reach Matt on Twitter at MDTopFWFB. I'll plug his stuff just because, even though he's not here. All right, we're gonna jump in. We got to talk about the big news of the week and the day. Juan Soto magically coming up, or well, is up now, and starting off his career with a bang in his second major league at bat. He hits a 3-run home run. It's pretty insane. A 19-year-old getting the call this quickly. He's been fantastic at every level of the minor leagues, and so far has been fantastic at the major league level, it being one full game that he's played. Mike, what are your thoughts on Juan Soto, and what kind of impact do you think he has this season?
Well, we're doing this on a Monday night. I'm hoping that the fab worked out for you and you were able to nab him. A lot of people obviously kind of went to the waiver wire pretty quickly trying to get them. Hopefully it wasn't a fastest finger situation like it was in one of my formats that I play in. But either way, I mean, as far as looking at Soto, he was just number two prospect for Washington coming into the season, obviously behind Victor Robles. We were talking pre-show how this is pretty shitty for Robles, because if he was healthy, he probably would be getting the majority of the playing time right now, and a lot of fantasy owners would probably be happy about it. But this guy is just mature way, way beyond his years. The last time that I remember such a young prospect getting promoted this early is Jose Fernandez, and we all kind of know how it worked out for him from a skills perspective. Unfortunately, we know what happened in the end result. But
wow, way to go back to the dark place, Mike.
I know. I mean, it just reminds me of that. I know. It just reminds me of that from a promotion standpoint. But from a fantasy standpoint, you have to add him in all formats. If you're in a 10-team league and for some reason he's available, I think he is a viable add. Really, really strong plate skills. Doesn't strike out a ton. Really good walk rate. Batting average and hit tool is great. Not the greatest speed in the world, but I think that he has the ability rest of way to hit 15, 20 home runs. And, I mean, he hasn't been a massive power guy in the minor leagues, but he's somebody that can, I think, with the balls being the way they are in the majors, hit 15 or so home runs the rest of the season and have a strong batting average for you, playing in a pretty good Washington lineup. A lot of good things. If there's something that I would like to see, I'm hoping that he doesn't hit a massive wall sometime soon, but it's just going to be kind of time will tell. But I think he is going to play the rest of the season, and he's going to be up in the major leagues, and I think he's going to do great.
Ryan, what are your thoughts on Soto?
I mean, just totally fascinated when I saw that he was even called up this early. This is a guy who was in low A like less than 2 months ago. And then even more surprised at just the fab bidding on him. I know in the NFBC he's not going to be available till next week, but in Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational there were some wild bids, and I think Mike, you were one of them. That was
yeah.
Two.
I don't I was know. High.
yeah. And I can't really blame you guys. I mean, everything I've read on Soto, especially from our minor league guys at HQ, Chris Blessing and Brent Hershey, both saw him, have seen him about a handful of times already this season, and just glowing reviews. Like, there's really lightning quick hands, plus power to all fields. And we saw that tonight going opposite field off a lefty over 400 feet. You know, Chris tagged Soto as a 300 hitter, 30 home runs. Plus upside at peak. I just, you know, it's really hard for me to kind of get behind what he does this year. Again, just the meteoric rise is just, you know, let's see how he adapts to major league pitching over the long haul. But again, some of those crazy fab bids, like, you've got to take your shot if you can. And if you believe this is an impact bat, and Soto certainly has that upside to produce right away. You know, I can see where people are opening up the wallets. I think I only bid like $89. I knew I wasn't going to get him, but just try it anyway.
Yeah, I think I bid 240 something, and I didn't even come close in my league. Unfortunately, I couldn't find him in the system for Tout Wars, and he went to someone else, even though I would have bid more. And unfortunately, I'm playing that guy this week, so that's a really great start to Juan Soto's career for me.
At least he has no.
Yeah, so we'll see how it goes. But, you know, today's home run was really, really impressive. I still think he is growing, and that the power isn't, you know, the game power isn't quite going to be there. But I think you have to take the bet. Like, if you're gonna go all in, and, you know, there was a guy in one of my NL only leagues that bid over $900 of the $1,000 fab that he asked for the season on him. And, like, you know, and we saw, I think, in NL Tout Wars, he went for over $600 to Lenny Melnick. You know, if you're still, you know, for some reason he wasn't in the system, like in NFBC leagues, and, you know, you're fab bidding, or maybe it's happening tonight. You know, you've got to go for it if you want him on your team. You're not going to get him for, you know, 30-40% of your fab for the most part. You're going to have to spend 50% or more. And we've seen guys come up and hit right away, even young guys. I mean, look at what Ozzie Albies is doing in the major leagues right now. And, you know, we saw Carlos Correa hit the ground running when he first came up. So I think there may be struggles along the way, but at no point in the minor leagues has he struggled. The worst line that he put up was at Double A this year. In 8 games, he hit .323, .400, .581. Like, that's the worst line that he's put up in his minor league career. So I don't think that there's too much worry about him long term. Short term, I think he could be a star, and I'm willing to take the bet on it.
I just want to say, I don't know if you guys watched the home run, but his size is pretty good. I mean, especially for a 19-year-old, but, like, he is almost built like Moncada in the sense that his physique is ready for the major leagues. So, I mean, I'm not really worried physically about him. I'm more worried just from an intellectual, like, kind of standpoint, if I pronounce that correctly, intellectual. Just him being able to go through the grind of the major leagues day in and day out, and then people starting to get the book on him and stuff like that. But I don't know. I will say this. I spent 80% of my fab on him, and I won him pretty convincingly. So I don't know. Maybe you can go like 65-70%. I saw some people have better bids than me. I also saw some people have worse bids, but either way, I think you're going to have to go at least like 65%.
Yeah. I mean, you can argue there's not going to be another talent up like him, depending on what happens with Toronto with Vladdy Jr. So, especially on the hitting side in some of these deeper leagues, you got to take your shot. So,
yeah. And Vlad's already owned. So Eloy Jimenez may be the only guy that I would see.
True.
That I would kind of spend that much on. Brendan Rodgers, if somehow they've brought him up to play second base. Tucker, I wouldn't spend as much on than, I don't know, maybe I would. It kind of depends, I guess, on the role and who. Like, if George Springer got injured out for the season, then yes, I would spend the bank on Kyle Tucker. But
I'm surprised Tucker's not even up. I mean, Like, I know he's not blowing.
I am too.
I know he's not blowing, you know, the doors off the hinges or anything, but I mean, he's faring fairly well in AAA. They've just lost Reddick and Derek Fisher. Now it's like, why isn't Kyle Tucker in the major leagues?
I don't know. Why is Willie Calhoun not in the major leagues, Justin? We don't have reasons for these things. We're just here
because the Rangers hate short, squatty guys for some reason.
I guess so. Pick up Willie Calhoun right now. That's the best advice we can give you. Pick up Willie Calhoun now before he ends up getting promoted.
Let's talk about another guy who's been promoted recently. That's Austin Meadows. Meadows was a former top prospect in the game that's lost a little bit of his sheen because of injuries. He comes up to replace Starling Marte, who hits the DL with an oblique injury. His stay in the majors may be abbreviated once Marte is back. But Ryan, what are your thoughts on Austin Meadows?
Yeah, I was almost just as intrigued with Meadows in this week's fab bidding as Soto, just because really like kind of the five tool production that Meadows can produce right away. I think Justin, you mentioned, you know, top prospect, but he's been hurt, had numerous issues, still a top 50 prospect on HQ's website, and has already hit a home run and a steal and is 5 for his first 11 so far. But yeah, the rub there is playing time, at least in the short term. When Marte's not supposed to be out too long, when he comes back, I don't see Meadows keeping a gig. But then again, in outfield, there are multiple paths to playing time. Marte has been hurt in the past. Gregory Polanco gets hurt all the time. So if Meadows gets dropped, if he gets sent back down to the minors, or you know, his owner doesn't think that Meadows is going to play, I think there's a buying opportunity there. I think the skills are there for Meadows to produce right away, both power, speed, and average.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Meadows?
Yeah, I mean, at least initially, I don't think he's going to stay up that long, even if the Pirates are conservative with Marte, which I think they will be. He's already feeling better, and I think that we can expect him back sometime at the worst, maybe 2 weeks. So, I mean, we get a couple weeks of playing time with Meadows, and I agree with Ryan. I think that he can be a five-category contributor. He was a top 10 prospect for HQ, I believe, coming into last season, and then obviously like some hamstring issues, and you know, I think he had an oblique injury as well that kind of stunted him staying up there, but still a top 50 guy. And you know, obviously when you're dealing with hamstring injuries and a guy that is a speedster, you worry if he's going to continue to steal bases. And he had 8 steals in the minors before being called up to the majors. Obviously he has 1 steal now, so I think it's safe to say that he feels pretty good with his legs at the moment. And that's I'd say the biggest skill for him, is being able to steal bases. You know, I really like Meadows. I think if he were to get a full-time-ish role in the majors, that he's automatically 15-team viable. He's probably viable in even 10-teamers, honestly. Pretty good hit tool, makes good contact. He has struggled at times with injuries, but whenever he's not struggling with injuries, he's a guy that can really, you know, produce, you know, double-digit power, good amount of stolen bases. I would say, you know, in a full season, 20 to 25 steals is in the cards for him. And I think that overall he can be somebody that can also hit for good batting average as well. So five tool contributor. I like him a lot. I just, for right now in the immediate short term, I don't think that he's somebody that you you know, really need to add or spend a lot on. But I think long term, for the rest of the season, if he can carve out another 200 plus at bats or so, that he's really a really good add, especially for deeper formats.
Yeah, I actually added him in Tout Head to Head, so he was one of the guys I did get. I like Meadows a lot. Yes, the playing time may become an issue, and he could get sent down in a few weeks. But I think one of the things we learned last year from Cody Bellinger is bet on the talent and hope that it, you know, they figure out a way to keep him in the lineup. Yep. You know, we were all worried that Cody Bellinger was going to get sent back down. You know, then guys got hurt, guys underperformed, and the Dodgers needed him, and so they figured out a way to keep in the lineup. I'm going to bet on a talent like on Meadows, a talent like Soto, that once the playing time becomes a bit murky, as long as they produce, they're gonna stay up. So, you know, the Pirates are trying to compete in a very, very tough division right now. They don't have a ton of depth and you know, talented depth on that team, so I think they'll figure a way to keep Meadows playing if he hits. And so far, you know, obviously it's a really, really small sample, But so far, he's hitting 455 in three games with a home run and a stolen base already. And like Mike mentioned, he stole eight bases in the minor leagues prior to coming up. So he looks healthy. He looks talented, and I'm willing to bank on him. Let's talk about a guy who is no longer a top prospect, but at one point people thought highly enough of Kyle Freeland for him to go eighth overall to the Colorado Rockies in the 2014 draft. The results have been, you know, decent throughout his minor leagues and in his major league stays. Right now he's pitching really well. He's got a 3.17 ERA, eight strikeouts per nine. He's keeping the ball in the yard in Colorado, so it's been a decent run. Ryan, what are your thoughts on Kyle Freeland?
So yeah, Freeland, I don't know. You got to be really good to be to be serviceable in Colorado. We're seeing that with John Gray, who I think has some of the, you know, some ace level skills and isn't producing. Freeland, you know, coming into season, he lacked a third pitch. He's throwing a few more cutters this year. That's really been his swing and miss pitch. Throwing a few more changeups. That's the third pitch that he's trying to work in. It's been slightly more effective this year, but I'm not terribly excited with Freeland. HQ's expected ERA is closer to four. The strikeout and walk rates are mediocre, but I do think he's a decent streaming play. You know, six out of his nine starts have been away from Coors Field, so that's been a nice little boost for him, but that'll even out over time. But yeah, his last three starts away from Coors have been 18 strikeouts, three walks, and that's pretty darn good. So I like him as a streaming option, but long term, you know, meh.
All right, Mike, what are your thoughts on Freeland?
Pretty much the same. I think that he's just a back end starter for, you know, mixed leagues at this point. Somebody that you can stream. I don't really understand. I guess his walks right now are three per nine, 58% first pitch strike rate. I think that we could see the walk rate kind of creep back a bit. Ryan looks at all the same things I do for Baseball HQ. So, I mean, we're going to end up being very, very close or identical in stats. But overall, like, his pitch mix has remained. He doesn't have anything that's great. He doesn't have a wipeout pitch or anything like that, that which, you know, concerns me in terms of looking at strikeout rate and things that we would need him to do in Coors Field. Right now, his ERA at Coors Field is 1.4 over three starts. That's obviously going to regress negatively. And I just think that, you know, as the season goes on and as he pitches in Coors more, we're going to start seeing some regression there. But his cutter is getting some more whiffs, so I guess we can look at it that way. Like, that's a good thing. But there's just no pitch for him that makes me feel confident that he's going to be able to either get guys out on the ground or strike them out as well. Pretty decent strikeout rate thus far, decent ground ball rate, but for the season I think he's going to end up sitting around a four ERA like Ryan mentioned, and, you know, probably a 7 to 7.5 K per nine, and, you know, just not really anything that I want to buy right now in fantasy. I think he's just kind of a decent option, but not overwhelmingly great.
Yeah, the changeup is really bad too. Like, I know he's throwing it more.
It's
not good. And so, I mean, he is really mainly a two-pitch guy. He doesn't have elite velocity. It helps that he's left-handed to kind of cover up some of that velocity. But he's getting some decent ground balls, which is, you know, helpful, especially in a place like Colorado. But he doesn't get on top of hitters. First pitch strike rate is under 60%. His swinging strike rate, while it's up, is still under 10%. So I don't think he's going to, like, improve his strikeout numbers any more than he already has. And it has been a huge bump this year. But, yeah, back-end guy or a streaming guy in probably a 15-team league, you know, mid-to-back rotation guy in NL only for me. So let's talk about a guy that people are very, very excited about and has seemingly taken a big step forward. And that is Sean Newcomb of the Atlanta Braves. Currently has a sub-3 ERA, striking out over a batter an inning, keeping the ball in the yard. The walks are still high, so there are some red flags. But, Mike, what are your thoughts on Sean Newcomb?
My deal with Newcomb is this. When you watch him, he still doesn't pitch the ball where the mitt is. I mean, he does it on occasion sometimes, but he still is wild. And I know that we can see that, we can identify that through his walk rate, but Regardless, right now, 0.5 home runs per nine, 7% home run to fly ball rate. That is going to go up. And I understand like the whole effectively wild theory that, you know, it probably comes into play with somebody like Newcomb. But if you looked on the ESPN player rater, I bet he's somewhere in the top. He's 17th among starters. He's probably a back end top 50 guy, maybe top 40 at best. I mean, he does have really good strikeout stuff. He tries to keep his pitch mix pretty simple, you know, fastball, curveball, change. But at the end of the day, while I can bank on strikeouts with him, I don't like his home ballpark, even though it's the right field side that usually causes more problems in the home run department. He's probably more of a 4 ERA guy. The home runs are bound to regress. He's probably bound to regress in walk rate as well, 57% first pitch strike rate thus far. And, you know, even as he's been good, you know, this last month, his last four starts, 54% first pitch strike rate, and his control still has been 3.6 walks per nine. So I think at some point the luck's going to kind of run out on the control department, and then he's going to start giving up some more home runs. That's going to obviously eat into his ERA, et cetera. So, top 40, 45, maybe 50 starter at best the rest of the way, and that's the way I kind of look at him.
Ryan, what are your thoughts on Newcomb?
Pretty much ditto. I think the strikeouts are legit. I think he can strike out a batter per inning. I do think the home run is going to bite him at some point, especially when you factor in his control issues. So an under three ERA, no way. I'm with Mike. I think it's closer to a four. Kind of an interesting, you know, Mike said that, you know, talked about the simplistic pitch mix. He gets a decent amount of whiffs with his fastball, and he's complemented that with the changeup that he's throwing almost a quarter of the time. That's getting some good whiffs too. So I like that part of his game, but yeah, there's bumps in the road. I'm selling Newcomb if I can right now. I think you've got the best that you're going to get out of him at this point.
I'm selling Newcomb as well, but I am definitely higher on him than I am on the last guy we talked about in terms of Kyle Freeland.
Oh yeah,
one of the things is
the changeup is actually good. Like, it's not great, but it's good. It's not bad. And so I think he's definitely not going to sustain this. And I seem to remember when he came up last year, he was pretty good for a little while, and then the wheels came off. And that's just what I'm afraid of now, especially with that super high walk rate. You know, it's just he's going to get in trouble, you know, as the ball starts carrying more in the summer, you know, as his 256 BABIP kind of stabilizes a little bit. I think you're gonna see him get batted around quite a bit at times, and so if you can sell high on him right now, there are some people who are super stoked on the lefty, and being left-handed does minimize some of the damage from that short porch and right, but it's not gonna minimize everything, and I think at some point he's gonna get into trouble. So I'm definitely selling on Sean Newcomb as well.
Yeah, definitely, and I think his prospect pedigree can work in your favor as a Newcomb owner as part of your negotiations. So I'd definitely build that in.
For sure. Let's talk about Travis Jankowski, because he's getting some run in San Diego. This was a guy that in 2016 stole 30 bases, and then injuries, underperformance have held him back quite a bit from getting back to it last year. But so far, he's hitting 359, 438, 469, has a home run and 7 stolen bases in just 19 games for the Padres this year. Ryan, is it time to buy back in on Travis Jankowski?
I think it is, and I have in a bunch of leagues. I've picked him up even in 12-team NFBC leagues just because the steals, I need him so bad. And I think Jankowski, the speed game is absolutely legit. He's a burner. He runs. He's been running quite a bit in San Diego, and the play skills support him getting on base. 12% walk rate, 80% contact rate. Yeah, he's not a 359 hitter or whatever, but I think he can be in the high twos, 280, 290 type of guy. On the downside, this dude has zero power, 18% hard hit rate so far, and a 60-something percent ground ball rate. I can't believe he actually has a home run this year. I'd actually like to see that as a highlight.
I wonder if it was inside the park. I feel like I would have seen that on a replay somewhere, but...
seems like there's a better chance of that happening than something going over the fence. Also with Jankowski, he doesn't really play against lefties, so that's something to watch out for if you're setting lineups. If you know, if it's a weekly league, just take a look, and if he's facing, you know, three or four lefties in that week, you might want to bench him if you've got other options. But in weeks where he faces right-handed pitching and you need steals and batting average, I think he's going to be around.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Jankowski?
I fucking love Travis Jankowski. I picked him up a couple weeks ago, and the guy's been awesome ever since. He's batting leadoff against righties. I believe you guys have already mentioned that. And no, he won't play against lefties, but you know what? He was absolutely free. What's the difference between him and like Jerod Dyson, you know, who's hitting under 200 right now? Or really, I mean, like Endurance Yarte, who, you know, has four home runs and will continue to hit a little bit of power, and Jankowski doesn't. But there's really no difference in terms of plate skills. Like Ryan mentioned, he walks. He's going to get on base, especially. That's why he's leading off against righties. No power, but I mean, if he plays the rest of the year and we don't see an injury situation, I think he can steal 30 bases again. And, you know, he did that 30 bases in 2016 with 335 at bats. Right now he's at 64. I mean, you know, he can't get another 200 at bats the rest of the way, 300 at bats against righties, hit somewhere in the vicinity of like 280, 290, 270. I think I love him for that fact alone. So, you know, 2 to 3 category contributor, but at the end of the day, he's free, and I think he's going to keep up what he's been doing, not to the batting average pace, but in terms of stolen bases and being productive, especially in on-base percentage leagues as well. I'm all on board.
Just FYI, it was an actual home run. It was against Luke Gregerson.
that explains.
So
that's awesome.
There's your
answer.
Sorry,
Luke.
They didn't call it a fly ball. They called it a flyner. I don't know what a flyner is, but I absolutely love that name.
That was his only home run of the season. I'm fairly confident in that. Only outside the park home run of the year.
Yeah, I think that's a fairly good bet right there. I kind of love what Jankowski's doing right now. He has a swinging strike rate under 5%. He's making contact 86.6% of the time. He's only swinging outside the zone under 14% of the time. Like, the plate skills are great. And, I mean, this is a guy who's going to rely on his speed. Yes, I don't love the fact that he's hitting as many ground balls as he is. But he's also a guy that, you know, he's fast enough. You put the ball on the ground, maybe something happens. You know, and if it's weakly hit enough that maybe he can outrun infield, you know, get a bunch of infield hits. I should probably look at his infield hit rate. And see where that's at, 14.7%. So that's pretty decent. I think that with all the turmoil that we've seen, guys coming up and down and struggling in that Padres outfield, that I think there's a pretty good chance that he could stick around long enough to steal 30 bases, like Mike said. And, you know, he's almost halfway there. So I like Jankowski. I think you should pick him up, especially if you're in a daily moves league, because what Ryan mentioned is important. Like, he will get platooned a fair amount of the time, and so you may have to kind of pick and choose your battles. And you know, and if you're in a weekly league, you're going to have to kind of plan it out and see how many lefties, how many righties he's facing or supposed to face in an upcoming week. But in deeper formats, especially if he's still around, go ahead and grab him. But I think you can probably pick him up in 12-team leagues right now. All right, let's move on and talk about Brandon Belt, who is just absolutely murdering the ball. This is a guy that I've hated for a very long time, and it's taken until this year to finally make me look a little bit foolish. So, Mike, tell me what you're seeing from Brandon Belt.
Every time I think of Brandon Belt, I think of Joe Pitleski and I's bet from last year where it was Hosmer versus Belt. And, you know, Joe, if you're listening, I'm sorry. I had to mention it again because every time I think of Belt, I think of my victory. But I actually.
There's something to be said for being 1 year off.
Mm-hmm. There is. Really, the skills aren't different, or at least that much different from last year. Obviously, concussion issues are going to weigh heavily here with Belt, and you know, part of me, as much as I don't want to feel this way, part of me is like, it's just a matter of time before he does go down. So I kind of want to sell him if I do have him. Not luckily, I just don't have many shares this year because I wasn't confident, but he was free. I mean, he was being taken outside the top 300, which is criminal.
$1 in tout wars for me.
Yeah, I mean, so that was criminal in itself. But when you look at, I mean, he obviously made a swing change. I think that that's been well documented. And if it hasn't been well documented, then it shows in his launch angle and such. Right now, his launch angle sits at almost 24 degrees. Is that what it is? Degrees, percent, whatever you call Statcast crap. Yeah. Whatever. But exit velocity's up, launch angle's up. Hard hit percentage is about the same as last year, which is why I don't think the skills are really that much different. But you know, home run to fly ball rate is up at 20% right now. I think the career high for him was 18% a couple years ago. Yeah, back in 2014. So I mean obviously the home run to fly ball will go down a bit, but power metrics fully support this. This is definitely going to be the year, barring health, that he hits over 20 home runs. I would go as far as to say that he possibly could challenge 30 if he does stay on the field all year long. Regardless, I do believe what he's doing. I don't think that it's going to be at this clip, but I do think that he's going to continue to do something like this the rest of the way. And I'm just really kind of praying that we finally see him stay healthy. The Giants need him to stay healthy, quite frankly. So yeah, we'll see what happens there. But I do believe.
Ryan, what are your thoughts on Belt?
Yeah, I mean, everyone had Brandon Belt fatigue. I remember in the HQ's baseball forecaster, we put an upside of 30 home runs on him this year, and everyone was like, really? Again? Even I was like, I don't know. But to Mike's point, really, the skills are almost unchanged. I mentioned the swing change is a little bit more compact, a few more fly balls, so that's helping. But the raw power has really been there for the last 4 years. At HQ, we've got a metric called expected power index. Belt's one of four guys in the majors whose raw power has been 50% greater than league average. So the power's been there despite a career high home run total of just 18, which is kind of mind boggling to me as well. Yeah, it is. And he's not going to hit 300, but I think he can flirt with 30. 30 home runs and maybe a, you know, 270, 280 average, which given how bad first base has been, Justin, we were talking before the show, HQ, we've got Belt as the number two first baseman between Freddie Freeman and CJ Crone. So
CJ Crone, how about it? How about it?
Yeah, that's it's been. Last year was the year I was prior to the season, I was like, well, first base looks awful. And then it was like super deep. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this year I was like, oh, don't worry about first base. So speaking of being a year early, like I mentioned in the introduction of Brandon Belt, I have been a huge Brandon Belt detractor for a long time. However, I did at the beginning of the season, I did identify that swing change and really broke it down in a couple short pieces for Fantasy Alarm and Fangraphs. It's really helped him. Making it more compact, making it a little bit less long, has really allowed him to really increase the exit velocity. And there obviously has been a launch angle change. I buy almost all of this. Obviously, I don't think he's necessarily going to hit 300. But I think this is a year in which he could hit 290, which he's never done at the major league level. He's come close. He came close in 2013. But I also think he could add that with power. And the thing I had always said with him was he's either going to hit for average or he's going to hit for power. He's not going to be able to both with how long his swing's been in the past. But the work he did in the offseason to make that swing more compact, I think, is going to allow him to do both. And so I think that we're talking about a guy who is a top 7 to 10 first baseman rest of the way. The only reason I hesitate is I don't know how good that lineup's going to be around him. So I just worry that maybe the run support, the RBI support may not be there, but I don't know that you sell on him right now. Actually, I think you try to buy, because I think some people are going to want to try to, you know, make good on their very, very cheap investment, and I don't think they're going to sell him high enough.
Yeah, but the challenge is this. The challenge isn't his skills, because all of us agree that his skills are great, but the concussion, like, he has one more concussion. Like, we're talking career-threatening at that point. Like, he might not even come back.
Like, they were fluky-type stuff. Like, it's not like, you know, one was, like, diving into a base. You know, he plays first base. You know, I think he's going to be okay.
His neck is, he's like a giraffe.
They call him Baby Giraffe.
Does that correlate to concussions? I don't know.
It should. I mean, I don't know why.
Are you saying he's built like a bobblehead?
Yeah, pretty much.
I don't think he can. You know, and Mike, you're not saying you're going to bank on another concussion, but I'm more with Justin. I wouldn't really ding that too much, even though Joe Mauer just had a recurrence of it, which is kind of sad to see. I agree with you, man. I think he's a buy high type of guy. And really, the park hasn't hurt Belt at all either. I think he's got 7 out of his 11 home runs at AT&T.
Yeah, and they've been moonshots. Like they're not cheapies either. You know, especially being a lefty in that park. You know, I think he's hit at least one or two of them. I know he's hit one, but maybe two of them into the cove.
Yep.
You know, and so like these aren't cheap home runs, and he's also gone opposite way with a couple of his home runs, which is good to see. All right, let's talk about a guy who, another one of those guys that people have been super hyped on for a long time, and you know, seem to finally give up on coming into this year. That's Vince Velasquez. He has been a little bit up and down this season, but has had his moments where he's looked really good. So, Mike, what are your thoughts on Velasquez?
My belief on him from last year still reigns true. I think he is a reliever long term. He only has 2 pitches, in my opinion, and he can't get lefties out because both of his secondary offerings, the slider and the curve, are not really awesome at getting lefties out naturally. You need something like a changeup or something that goes down. And really, in reality, I don't like both those pitches for him to get lefties out. Lefties hitting 310 against them thus far. They hit 287 against him last year. They hit 270 against him the year before. It's an obvious problem. He has an issue with left-handed hitters, and until they are out of the game, I don't think Velasquez is going to be an awesome starter in Major League Baseball. So I still think his long-term role should be as a reliever. As far as what you'll get out of him the rest of the way, I think, you know, HQ has his expected ERA right around 4. I think that is fair the rest of the season. He does have a pretty good strikeout rate, and I think that will continue. It's supported by an 11% swing strike rate. Velocity is decent, but he's going to continue to give up home runs. He's going to continue to be pretty mediocre in walk rate, and I think he's going to continue to struggle against lefties. So I'm pretty much out on Velasquez as an overall starter, but Sir Anthony Dominguez, man, pick him up as a possible saves option. I'm all about Sir Anthony Dominguez. Awesome name. Great A name. Sir Anthony.
Sir Anthony Dominguez. The 8th inning tonight, and Neris got the saves.
So. Oh, you've got to be kidding me.
It's the NL version of Mike Socha. Like right now, it's so bad over in Philly.
There was someone on Twitter who was asking me about like, hey, which one of these closers like would you invest in? You know, from like a bunch of really crappy teams, and you know, and I was like, I guess I would go after Dominguez. I think Winkler was the other one that I mentioned out of the grouping that he gave me. He goes, Do you think? You know, Dominguez is going to get the saves. I was like, I don't trust anything that, you know, that they're doing, but I'm going to bet on the skills, and Neris is garbage.
Did Dominguez give up a base runner? Because he was like the first pitcher since 1908. Oh, he did. He gave up a hit tonight. Damn it. But he was the first pitcher to make it through his first 5 appearances without any type of base runner. And also, you know, I guess he had to face like a minimum of 2 hitters per inning or whatever, but like, or per appearance. But either way, it was the first person since like 1908 to do it. So whatever. But he's going to be an all-star, Hall of Famer. That's, I mean, book it.
All right.
Hall
of
Famer. He's going to be knighted.
Sir. Yep. Sir Anthony Dominguez.
Who are we talking about? Velasquez?
Yeah, we're talking about Velasquez, yeah. Ryan. So go ahead.
I actually saw Velasquez. I saw his first start of the year. I was down in Atlanta and saw him pitch against the Braves, and it was the quintessential Velasquez outing. You went 2 2/3, gave up 9 hits and 70 pitches.
Oh,
it took over 3 hours. Or over 2 hours, sorry, to get through the first 3 innings. That's who I think of when I that's what I think of when I think of Vincent Velasquez. You know, he's been better than that. That was actually his worst start of the year. But just hasn't been able to pitch deep into games throughout his career. You know, he's gone to the 6th inning a few times so far this season, but hasn't gone 7. I just think he's inefficient. Just a couple pitches in the repertoire. I agree. I kind of really want Philly to try him out in like a Josh Hader type of role, as like a, you know, middle inning multi-inning reliever. I think that'd be a better fit for him because, yeah, he's just not durable either. So a lot of things that that I'm not buying on with Velasquez as a starter, at least.
Yeah, he just gives up so many home runs.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, I mean, he hasn't, like, been terrible in terms of walking a ton of guys this year, which, you know, is a good thing to see. But at the same time, like, you can't give up, you know, a homer and a half, you know, a game. It just, you know, you just can't do it. So, I still want to believe that, you know, those, you know, beautiful outings we saw in his rookie year might actually come back at some point. But I think you guys are right. I think he is a bullpen arm long term. And I'm not willing to risk my ratios just to gain the strikeouts, unless it's a, you know, streaming situation. But I think in most leagues, he's probably owned. All right, let's move on to a guy I do really like and have liked for a while, and he is looking pretty good in his return from Tommy John, and that is Andrew Heaney. 10 strikeouts per 9, a 3.35 ERA so far. Ryan, what are your thoughts on Andrew Heaney?
Yeah, I've been impressed. Really have. I watched a few of his starts out here, and he's actually, you know, he's given up, I think, 15 earned runs on the season, and 7 of those came in one outing against your San Francisco Giants, actually, in the second game of the season. Yes. So, I mean, I hate to kind of like cherry pick, you know, that certain thing, but if you've given up half your earned runs in one game and it's the end of May, I think that's, you know, that's interesting. Since that outing, Heaney's given up 1 earned run, 1, 2, 1, and then 0. So he's been nails. Curveball, changeup have been great pitches for him. Heaney's throwing the curveball more, and I think that's driving what we're seeing with some of the growth in strikeouts. And really, he's been a strikeout guy for a while now, with a lot of swinging strikes. So I like that. In terms of, you know, rest of season, I am definitely concerned about, you know, durability, him wearing down in the second half, an early shutdown type of candidate, just given the injuries. 28 innings in the last 2 years is not very good. So I think if you're a Heaney owner, I would ride him out for a little while longer, and then maybe look, I don't know, maybe June, July, right around the All-Star break is maybe when I'd start to dangle him on the market, because I do think the skills support a low to mid 3 ERA, which is what he's got right now. I just worry about the second half of the year with him.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Heaney?
I love Heaney. Mimic a lot of what Ryan said. His skills support what he's doing right now, and the curveball is certainly kind of really promoting a really good strikeout rate as well. 12% swing strike rate to back the 10.3 strikeouts per 9. You know, my main issue is the innings, but you know, go through the Angels roster. They don't have a replacement for him. They meant to come into the year with a 6-man rotation, and right now they're struggling. They have 5, but I bet if they, you know, had their choice, they'd still roll with a 6-man group and you know, kind of book it. I think that Chris Archer goes to this team at some point, and when he does, obviously we'll see what happens with Heaney as a result of that. But they're definitely going to add a starter. And when that happens, what do we do with Heaney? Fantasy owners aren't dumb. They know that if you're floating Heaney out, that, you know, you obviously don't believe in him staying in the rotation all year. But at the same time, if you're the Angels, how do you stop him from, how do you just take him out of the rotation and have him not pitch anymore? So I would say that, you know, I mean, the last time he threw over 100 innings was in 2015. It's a couple years you're removed from that. I would venture to say that his limit would probably be 120 or so for this year, which he is on pace to break in a couple months here. But at the same time, like, I believe in Heaney, so I'm still willing to buy him. And if you know, he was also somebody that, you know, you just didn't have to pay any type of real cost for. So, you know, if you end up riding him for the next couple of months and he is quality like this, then, you know, you really already got the bang for your buck on that. So I'm willing to buy him in the hopes that you are, you know, he might fade out if you stretch him too far, but I'm going to buy him and get kind of the short-term results out of him that I think that he's going to continue to do.
Yeah, I think I'm with Mike on this. I don't think that anybody is necessarily going to buy him at the price that he's worth right now, because while I don't expect him to throw 200 innings or even 170 innings this year, I think the Angels may be forced into keeping him in the rotation, especially with their lack of depth, with wanting to only throw Otani, it appears, like once a week. I think they're going to be stuck in a situation where they've got to keep pitching Heaney, and maybe that comes at the cost at the length of his starts. Maybe at some point they start deciding that he's not a guy who's going to be able to go over six innings, and he's only done that once this year when he went eight, just destroying Houston. But part of that was just how quickly he worked through a lot of their batters, you know, only faced 27 batters in that outing. So I love what he's doing, and I think we forget that because of the fact he was traded twice in a day and the fact that he had the Tommy John surgery, that this was one of the top pitching prospects in all of baseball. I think this is a time where he's taking that step. And if you can buy in, I think he's a guy like Brandon Belt. Like, I wouldn't try to sell on him right now. If anything, I'm trying to buy on him right now because I think people are going to try to get out from under him, thinking he's either going to regress or he's going to have an inning shutdown. And I think he gets some pretty quality outings. As long as he's pitching, he's a top 30, 35 guy for me. So it just depends on how long he can pitch for.
Wasn't Heaney with the Dodgers for like a day?
Yeah, it wasn't even a day.
Yeah, that's right.
And he sent out an epic tweet when he got traded from the Dodgers to the Angels, thanking the organization and the fans for all the amazing memories.
I forgot about that tweet, but
absolutely fantastic.
Wow, that's a stellar move.
It really is. All right, let's move on and talk about CJ Cron. He's already been mentioned a couple times tonight because he's just been, you know, so amazing. So, Mike, you know, we talk about amazing Rays. We don't get to do that very often, so why don't we start with you?
I tell you what, the one amazing Ray is Daniel Robertson. Like, he's really kind of opening my eyes this year. He might actually be something, which a couple years ago I would have said otherwise.
The only guy who's homered off of Andrew Heaney since that Giants game.
Yeah, it was a granny too. So sorry, Heaney. But I digress. I think Cron is serviceable, especially in deeper formats, because he's going to play every day for the most part. He's a regular, and he didn't really get that opportunity in LA. At the same time, he's definitely outproducing what he should be. You know, HQ's power metrics, like, they have him as this is the third highest of his career, but in expected power index. But I just, a 22% home run to fly ball rate is fueling the 11 home runs thus far. Really no change in his plate skills. He's still striking out a good amount. Still not walking at all a ton, 5% walk rate. The hard contact isn't up from what it's been the last couple of years. And I just think that while I do think he eclipses 20 home runs, I don't think it's going to be in the 30 region. I think it's going to be more in the, like, closer to 20 than the 30, essentially. So when you look at his batting average, I think he's more of a 240, 250 hitter. And right now he's hitting 278. So in general, I think that he's definitely good as a compiler, somebody that in deeper formats is going to log you at bats. But at the same time, for especially in mixed formats, like right now, he's the number three first baseman on HQ. And according to the ESPN player rater, I doubt that is where he's going to finish. I think he's going to end up sitting in the, you know, top 25 area, top 20 maybe, but definitely not the top upper echelon for sure.
Ryan, what are your thoughts on Cron?
I figured you'd be higher on Cron than I would, man.
I'm not in denial. I'm a Rays fan. I like to look at things with a nice lens, but I'm not in denial. Yes, I'm a realist.
I think he's kind of been the same guy he's been. Cron broke out really in the second half last year, hit 14 homers, hit 267 when he finally got some playing time. And really has been the same kind of hitter since then. Yeah, the strikeouts are down from his peak when he hit 278 in 2016, but strikeouts are down everywhere. So I don't necessarily think his 72% contact rate is that bad. And the power's there. I don't know if he'll eclipse 20% homer to fly all season. But he's got a gig. He's playing every day. Doesn't really have any platoon splits. Cron's been a little bit worse against right-handers this year, hitting 248 off of righties against 353 off of lefties. But over his career, he's been pretty much identical splits-wise. So you've got a guy who's hot, has plus power, average contact. I think that gets you somewhere when first base is as bad as it is this year. So at HQ, we're projecting for the full season, 33 homers and 260 batting.
I would bet my life he doesn't hit 30 home runs.
You don't think he'll get 30?
No, I would bet my life on it.
I think he'll get close, life. But I don't think he
maybe.
I would say my over under is like 27.
Possibly, you know.
I mean, he's already got 11 in 176. So
19 the rest of the way, maybe. I don't know, man. I watch him every day. I'm not thinking he's a threat to hit a home run. Like, I'm just hoping he gets on base. I don't know. It's kind of, I was shocked when I actually looked at his stat line. You know, I mean, I know he's been on a pretty torrid pace the last couple of weeks for sure, but I don't know. That's crazy that you guys are this high on him. I don't know. It's kind of crazy to me.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's that high on him. I mean, this is a guy that hit, you know, 16 home runs last year in 373 plate appearances. I mean, is it really that much of a bump to say that he could hit another, you know, 10 to, you know, 14 on top of that with playing time? You know what I mean? You know, one of the things that's always held him back is he's not good defensively, and you know, the Rays can play him at DH, and you know, and they don't really have a lot of competition at first base. So, I mean, like you said, there's no reason for them not to play him. My biggest concern is, like, he doesn't have a great approach. Like, he's still swinging outside the zone over 36% of the time, which is a small improvement from last year, but not that great. He's getting a little bit of BABIP luck, which I think accounts for why his average is where it's at. So, like, if I was going to project rest of the way, I think I would put him as, like, a 250 hitter and getting another 15 to 17 home runs, which is super usable. And so, like, I don't think that there's any reason to sell on him, because I don't think you're going to get a ton of, you know, people who are buying super high on CJ Cron. I think you just, you know, continue to kind of ride him out. Know that there are going to be cold streaks that are coming, especially with a guy who swings outside of the zone as much as he does. But he has legit power, and that's going to play. And like I think both of you have mentioned, there's no reason for the Rays to take him out of the lineup.
Exactly. Even in a platoon, I mean, he's going to play every day. So, and that's another thing. Like, he was kind of jerked around with the Angels. I think that does have an impact on your production. If you know you're going to be in the lineup, that that helps. So,
yeah, you're swaying me a little bit. I'm getting swayed.
Come on over.
Come on over to Kron's. Like, the couch is warm. Come on over here, Mike. It's all right.
Anyways, moving on. We're going to finish out with Charlie Morton, who is just putting together, you know, building on kind of what we saw last season from him. But I mean, really just been fantastic. A sub 2 ERA, over 11 strikeouts per 9, keeping the walks in check. The homers have gone up a little bit, but not much. Mike, what are your thoughts on Charlie Morton? Is this a guy who's taking a step into kind of elite starter role?
I mean, I wouldn't say he's an elite starter, but his skills have been elite to date, especially since he went over to the Astros. I mean, his curveball usage has always been high, and I mean, we obviously have had to worry about durability with him, but the last couple of years, you know, 11% swing strike rate last year, 13% thus far, 11 strikeouts per 9, and I mean, it's fully supported. He has had premium velocity the last couple of years. His ground ball rate is stellar. His expected ERA is 2.66. His actual ERA is 1.94. So, like, yeah, he might regress a little bit, but at the end of the day, like, he is a top 20 starter at least. You probably can make an argument that he's top 10, but for right now, I feel comfortable saying he's a top 20 guy, and barring injury, I don't really see a change. His repertoire is awesome. Obviously, all of the Astros pitching staff is awesome. Justin Verlander is like a legit top 4 guy right now, maybe even top 3 at this point, and obviously McCullers has been doing great. Like, just the whole rotation has been doing awesome, and I think that Morton is a big part of that as well. So in a nutshell, yeah, I believe, and I think that if you can buy Morton at a high cost because somebody thinks that he's going to regress, I would gladly do it.
Ryan, what are your thoughts on Charlie Morton?
I mean, he's only the third best pitcher on his team.
arguably the fourth.
Arguably fourth, yeah.
True. I don't see what the big deal is. But yeah, Verlander with a 105, Cole with a 175 ERA, and Morton third with a 194. Is just insane. I have no clue how Charlie Morton, since Charlie Morton turned 30 years old, his fastball velocity has gone from 91 to 92 to 94 to 95 to 96.
Yeah.
I don't I don't know how that's possible, but you combine that with the ground ball tilt, with the curveball, Mike, that you just mentioned. Everything that I see here says he can keep up, you know, not a 1.9 ERA. Nobody does that, but a mid twos and flirt with the Cy Young by the end of the season. I absolutely think Charlie Morton could do that. I'm buying high on him. Even the injury concerns, yes, he's 34 years old, but he threw 147 innings last year in the regular season. I think with postseason, it was closer to like 170. So innings aren't too much of a concern for me, and he's obviously feeling great throwing at 96 miles an hour. So I'm fully on board with what Charlie Morton's doing, and wouldn't be surprised at all to see him in the race for some hardware at the end of the year.
Well, unfortunately, he's going to split the vote with like three other teammates. It'll be like the
yeah.
be like when USC guys doesn't win the Heisman because there's too many of them in the running.
How crazy would that be if those are the three guys in the running, Morton, Cole, and Verlander? That would be like absolutely insane. That'd be nuts.
I think Verlander and Cole are going to be there. I think what Ryan kind of
there too.
Yeah, Kluber would be there, but Ryan kind of brushed off the injury risk with a guy like him, and he did throw 170 innings exactly between his innings in
Liders.
The regular season, no, and in the playoffs.
Postseason.
So I mean, he did build up some innings last year. I just worry that guy throwing as hard as he is, this late in his career, I just worry that at some point something's gonna kind of happen to him, because something usually does. It's so weird because I don't understand how he's doing this, and there are definitely some luck, things going on. His strand rate is extremely high at about 93%. BABIP extremely low at 225. But the velocity, Ryan is saying, the highest of his career, swinging strike rate, highest of his career. I just have a hard time buying in on a 34-year-old with these kind of skill changes. And I mean, the RPMs on his spin rate, are through the roof, like it is with all the Astros pitchers this year, which, as much as I don't want to give any credence to Trevor Bauer. Tyler and Driveline Baseball, it feels like there's something fishy going on in Houston, but, it may just be, different grips and them working on things. So, I'm not going to accuse anybody of anything, but I think I would sell on Charlie Morton because I'm just so afraid of the wheels coming off, injury-wise. So, but you guys said, there's nothing in his profile that says that this isn't at least somewhat legitimate. Like you guys said, he's not gonna be sub two all year. Mm-hmm. But I mean, yeah. Could he be his xFIP on FanGraphs is 274? Could he do that? I think he could.
I think he could. And early on, you mentioned the gains in the walk rate. The walk rate was really his kind of chink in the armor, and he's mm-hmm. kind of shut that down. So, injury is really the only thing you can kind of look at and say, run away. But
I mean, his BABIP and left on base rate is going to regress probably pretty, in a pretty big rate. But I mean, other than
he's
that,
he's getting a lot of infield fly balls. He's not letting guys put the ball in the air. I mean, he's got a 20% home run to fly ball rate, and that's
just
going to
say
him.
That. Yep. Yep.
He's getting a lot of stuff on the ground, and the stuff that's not on the ground, he's getting a lot of infield fly balls, and there are things that I can little things I can point at, but nothing that is gonna turn him into a 4 ERA guy. He's either gonna stay healthy and just be great, or he's gonna get hurt, and I just don't know how strongly I feel about buying in on the health for a full season. All right, that is going to wrap us up for this episode. Ryan, thank you for joining us.
Always a pleasure, fellas.
Want to remind people again where you can reach on social media and then plug all your work.
Twitter at RyanBHQ. Find my stuff at BaseballHQ. I'm hiding behind the paywall sometimes, but they let some of my stuff out for free every now and then. So, thanks again for having me on. I hope Matt's okay. We lost track of him.
Don't text and drive.
he's touching himself to Tyler O'Neill photos. Don't worry about him. Oh, he's fine.
And Mike with the darkness again. Mike, why don't you remind people again where you can reach us on social media and then plug all your work?
At Mike Werner, FWFB. Ryan, it's a pleasure. Always is when you come on.
Yes.
Yeah, you just check out my stuff on Baseball HQ. I do the daily matchups column there on Mondays. I do the bullpen report for Fangraphs on Sundays. And I do the Roto write-up with you, Justin, on Fridays and Saturdays. So, yeah, check it all out.
And you can reach me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. You can read all my written work at Friends of Fantasy Benefits, Fangraphs, Fantasy Alarm, Fantrax. You can hear me on the Sleeper in the Bus podcast, podcasts on Friends of Fantasy Benefits, and on Fantasy Sports Radio on Sundays for the Tout Wars Hour. You can also catch a lot of the happenings in the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational via the podcast, the Great Fantasy Baseball podcast, or on Twitter at TGFBI, and I think that is about it. Yeah, sounds about right.
Are you sure?
Yeah,
positive?
I think
Come
so.
On.
You can also
get something else you're missing.
Yeah, well, you can also get like a picture of my face on your chest over on Amazon.
Oh, just you have to plug this.
Do not do it. People. You,
don't do it.
It's absolutely
you his
amazing.
Wife and kids, this you bought your wife and your kid shirts with your cartoon face on it. It looks like you're a character in South Park.
It's pretty amazing. But you can go over to Amazon, type in RotoWare Classics, and get that, or you can get the Sleeper in the Bus T-shirt. I think there might be a couple of those left over on RotoWare.com. Yeah. I think that's going to do it for this episode. For Mike, Ryan, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.